Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben.
Presented by Brakes Plus.
From Mike. Can you please just spend this hour bashing on Teddy so that Bronco Country can feel happy? He's so boring and useless.
There's always going to be a but.
Yeah, sure.
What's the
end? Can I add another question on top of that?
Sure. Do you believe that George Payton has already made up his mind that Teddy isn't the guy for next year?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you?
Oh, okay. Sure. Of course. Of course. Yes, absolutely.
There will be an upgrade here.
Right.
Next year.
Teddy Bridgewater, you want him on your roster.
Okay.
As a backup. You want him as a mentor. You want him to help a young guy along the way. That's to me who Teddy is. We talked about this forever. Do you think that Vic Fangio may not have wanted Drew Lock from day one, but I do think that George Payton was hoping. I think he came in here with a little hope. He had skepticism because you know what? You know who he evaluated while he was in Minnesota? Drew Lock. He evaluated him. And he didn't end up in Minnesota. So, I mean, it's not like he didn't know him coming in and have a, you know, have a thought on who he was and what he was. And so, you know, do I think you have hope? Absolutely. Do you have a certain amount of skepticism based on the study that you've done? Of course you do. It's just kind of how it works. There's a reason that George Payton didn't go after Justin Fields. I don't know 100% what that reason is, but he liked his athleticism. He just knew that it was going to take a long time for him to assimilate all the information that he has to assimilate and become an NFL quarterback.
Okay. If that was his critique of Justin Fields,
fair,
then why wasn't he drawn to Mac Jones, who does seem like the great assimilator?
Right. I don't know. Maybe he just didn't think he was going to be what he's turned out to be. Hey, listen, man.
Would Mac Jones be doing, just like you have said right. over and over again, that Lamar Jackson would not be Lamar Jackson if he went anywhere else other than Baltimore.
Correct.
Would Mac Jones be Mac Jones to this point if he went anywhere other than New England?
I think there's a very small contingent of teams where Mac Jones would be doing what he's doing right now.
Now, give me a couple others.
Well, I think
San Francisco?
I think Mac Jones in San Francisco, yes. I think Mac Jones in New Orleans under Sean Payton would be playing well. I think now here's what you have to understand. You gotta put yourself in a position to where, you know, there were some serendipitous events that happened during the course of training camp that led them to make a decision. Cam Newton gets COVID, refuses to get vaccinated, blah, 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 blah. They happen to have that same week a scrimmage against the Giants. He rolls out there against the Giants who have, you know, a very complex disguise and everything else from a secondary standpoint. They'll play a lot of different, not a lot of different. There's only a handful of coverages you play, but they can play them with a lot of different personnel looks and a lot of different people playing. You know, whoever is in the flat, it could be a D end playing that flat that normally a corner plays. You know, they do a lot of unique type of things. And Mac Jones goes out against the Giants and has a day where not a ball hits the ground. He had like 40 straight completions. And they're like, wait a minute. Now
they didn't think it would pop this quickly, but they wouldn't have drafted him if they didn't think it would eventually.
Right. Well, they,
now maybe this
remember
thing
they
came
started,
earlier than
remember
thought,
they started
still,
off and they weren't.
No, they were 2-4, I think.
Yeah. And then they go on a 6 or 7 game win streak. But what they came to realize is insatiable appetite for information, his ability to assimilate all the information, and by the end of the week, not make a mistake in what they want him to execute.
Okay, then help me out with this part. Because I think there's some quarterbacks that just, they have the whole toolbox is full. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, it doesn't matter, you know, who's coaching them. The talent, the greatness is going to eventually shine through.
Okay.
My point about a guy like Mac Jones is, if you're evaluating a guy like Mac Jones and you say, boy, he would really thrive with a Josh McDaniels, Sean Payton, Kyle Shanahan type coach, type system.
Mm-hmm.
Then why, if you think that a quarterback could be that good with that kind of a coach, would you stop yourself from drafting him because of who you currently have as your coach or OC? Why would that stop you from, why would Pat Shurmur being your offensive coordinator stop you from taking Mac Jones? Why not just say, I think this guy could be really good,
mm-hmm.
maybe great, with this kind of a coach. Go get that kind of a coach.
I don't think, first off, you never know. Like, you don't know, you have an idea, but you don't know about his capacity to learn and his capacity to run things and change things, you know, and the way he sees the game. I mean, remember, he's got a very small sample set. What, he had 1 year at Alabama? In 1 year of college football where he actually played?
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
So there's a very small sample set. He's not the most physically gifted guy in a league where a lot of teams want that dude who can run the read zone, that can scramble around, that can get them out of trouble. Like, there's a lot of coaches that want that, you know, want that added element. And that's why Kyle Shanahan went after Trey Lance. Knew it was a work in progress, but he wants to add that to the run arsenal and all the play action stuff that comes off of that success he had. Go back to RG3 when that's what they ran in Washington his rookie year and was the rookie of the year. So, yeah, I think there was a lot of, is Mac Jones already pressed against the ceiling? And I just don't think you could have understood the capacity. And then, you know, the coaching that he's getting in New England and, you know, the way they're operating that offense.
And by the way, let's not crown him just yet, okay? Let's not get him fitted for a gold jacket. He's in a terrific situation for a rookie to be in because they protect him. There they have no problem punting the ball. They love playing special teams there. They'll invite you. Come on in.
Oh.
Let's have a special teams battle today. What do you say? We'll do that.
You know what blows me away
they
about
play
them?
Defense.
Yeah.
They run the football. They you talk about insulated. They have insulated this guy. But so, he's on pace to throw 21 touchdowns and 11 picks. Okay.
Oh, so you tell me now you're saying that points don't come in a passing game? They come with playing physical and being able to run the ball and being able to play all three phases?
I'm saying I don't know if Mac Jones is an elite quarterback yet.
Oh.
I don't know if he's an elite quarterback yet.
Gotcha.
Do you think he's an elite quarterback?
Gotcha.
Oh, don't give me that. New England wins a different way. You know that. Don't give me. Nice try.
That's what.
New England wins a different way, just like Pittsburgh wins a different way.
So you're saying that you can win a different way?
You can win a different way, but there's only a couple of teams in the NFL that can do that consistently.
There's only a couple of teams that have. Here's what says.
And New England did it early on, to their credit. They won a couple Super Bowls doing it, but the reason they went on to have a two decade run like they did was because the quarterback became the guy.
I love Tom Brady.
Okay.
I get it.
They didn't protect and insulate him through 20 years.
And the coach became the GOAT.
Yep. Let's watch tonight, okay? Let's watch the rest of the season before we go crowning Squishy Mac, all right?
Here's what makes New England better than you.
Oh, Bronco Country's going to love hearing this.
We're better than you, and we know it.
Go ahead. Tell a bunch of Bronco fans how New England's better than you.
Well, I mean, the Bronco fans already know that New England's better than them. They're not, I mean, let's not insult them. They're not dumb. They know. And this is not, you see how you wedge drive? Like, you just made that about Bronco fans. I was just talking about the league in general.
Okay. Go ahead.
Why New England is better.
Go ahead. Kiss up to New England.
No, this is it's not kissing up. It's just who they are. They are patient.
Yes.
In the course of a game, in the course of a season, they exhibit patience that nobody else exhibits. They know that if I have smart players who are well coached and we put them in positions to use that knowledge, that we don't mind punting, we don't mind playing the field position game, that we are just going to bore you to death, bore you into making a mistake, and then we will capitalize on that mistake. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, you'll look up and you'll like, how did they score 33 on us? And how are we losing this game 33-14?
Right. And how many teams, for all the people are like, oh, go get them, Stink, you got them. Tell me how many teams can win that way consistently, year after year, decade after decade.
Most teams just don't have the patience. That's what blows me away about them. When you watch them, it is methodical.
Mm-hmm.
It is patient. They preach it. I talked to Bill Belichick about it in week 3,
mm-hmm.
just about their philosophical approach to we look at this like, we've cost ourselves some games from mistakes, but not many. And their whole philosophy is more games are lost than won, and we're going to let you lose games.
Yep.
That's how they operate. And you know what? Even with the GOAT, Tom Brady, they still play that style of football. Now, did they open it up more with him? Yes. The 2007 season with Randy Moss? Ridiculous. But the bottom line is, where do you think all the, hey, let's attack the flats with the backs? Right? We got 13 completions out there to our backs. Well, you're going to play cover 3? We'll get your curl flat defender. We'll run somebody behind him, make him drop the curl flat, then we'll throw the back there, and it's 2nd-and-2. Gotcha. And we don't mind throwing it 15 times to that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to give that to us? We'll take it. We'll execute that. That's them.
And I hope that 20 years from now, the Broncos will have built something like that, where they have such an ingrained culture and 2-decade playbook mm-hmm. of how to win. That would be great. But in the meantime, they are like 99% of the other teams in the NFL trying to win. And that's why when I come at you and say, look, running the football sounds great, but at the end of the day, you score 9 points.
Right.
Until they can get to being able to win games consistently like that.
Yeah.
Then you have got to at least acknowledge to me that, you know, running the football doesn't matter unless you have the passing game to make it matter. And they don't.
Here's the deal, which is an interesting conversation. Let's go down to that 20 play drive. Okay. You're at play 18. Get under center. have multiple tight ends, run kind of an 18 handoff and press the hole and you pick up 6-7 yards, right?
6 yards.
6 yards. Where was that? Was it first in or it was second?
It was, yeah, it was on that play, it was second and seven.
Second and seven. And
they ran it, yeah, or second and eight, and then they ran it for like 6 yards. So it was third and two at third the Kansas City seven.
Okay. So you get in that formation, power formation, you get quarterback under center, okay, and you run, you get a 6 yard run. Then what do? Third down and two, you get into shotgun, wide receivers in nasty splits, your running back is, I think you were in a left formation, so your running back was minused. He was side saddled next to your quarterback. So, two things. If you're going to run it in that formation, out of shotgun, where are you running it to? There are no plays to the right. You got to, when that happens, and every team runs it this way, you got to run to the left. So there's already a tell. They're going to run and it's coming over here. It's 100% tell. Now, there's a few teams that will run a counter out of that. Just a few. But it's kind of your only, it is your only kind of, your only adjunct play in the running game that goes the opposite direction. So if the Broncos haven't shown it on tape, they probably don't have it in. So you're pretty much, as a defense, know 100% if they try to run it out of this formation, it's coming to our defensive right to their left. But you're in shotgun, and now the odds are, if you're playing the odds and the percentages, you're going to throw the ball out of that. You know, in condensed, nasty formations, what do you run out of that? If you're in a bunch, right? If you're in a bunch on one side with three, like, wide receivers, you're running some type of pick routes out of that. So you're running one dude off, then one dude in, and one dude out, right? That's kind of, you just don't know who they are, but you can match up zone on that stuff, or you can play straight man on that. There's two ways. Like, you can box it and say, hey, you got the first in, you got the first up, and you got the first out. Jump it quickly, right? And you can take away the quick throw by doing it. Mm-hmm. Or you can just match up man. When you match up man, you got to be at different levels and a little bit more difficult, because you can get picks on that. When you get into the, you know, couple guys on one side, couple guys on the other side, but they're in nasty splits, meaning they're down close within 5 yards of the offensive tackles. Now what are you getting? I mean, it's 70% of the time you're getting some type of shallow crosses.
Do you
where
have,
you're trying to pick those
do
guys.
Do you have a problem with them throwing the football on that play? Or do you just have a problem with how they were aligned, that he was in shotgun? If he was under center, would you have had a problem if they had still thrown the ball on that play?
So, this is getting to my point. Thank you for bringing it up, because I was rambling. But that's you managing the show.
Correct.
You run the show. I run around in the show.
It's worked for 6 years.
Yeah, it's been established. So my point is, when you're in that situation, third down and two, and you've run it really well to get down in that situation, I want duality. I want you as a defense to have to think, both things are viable options. They crammed it down our throat to get here. They may run it. I want to get in. Like, one of the things, and as I do some consulting around the league, one of the things I tell coaches all the time is, and I always do it from my perspective, what makes it easy for us? Because I think the hardest job in football is, beyond the quarterback, is being an offensive lineman. And so what makes our job easier? If we get into the same type of formations, the same type of looks, and now you have to play honestly, you got to look at it and go, oh, shoot, they just had a 6 yard run and they pile drove us. Here it comes again. Bam, flag something out there on play action, and all those little crossing routes that they zoned off, maybe somebody bites up there and whoop. Somebody sneaks behind, and now
okay.
You dump it.
Fair. You laid it out perfectly, all right? Let me do the counter to that. If I'm Pat Shurmur,
I don't trust my offensive line to hold up while Teddy Bridgewater is retreating from center and turning his back to the defense. I don't trust our offensive line to be able to hold up under that situation. So if we're going to throw the football, yeah. I want him back in shotgun right. so that he at least has a little bit built in and, more time.
And this is the problem, because the offensive coordinators don't understand what the secret mushroom society is doing up front. So you may not trust us, but you know what you give me out of if you get under center? You give me options. You give me an option to, hey, man, if I know it's a run action play, I can come off the ball and show you run, and we've been running on you. You know what you have to do as a defensive lineman? You better honor it, because if you all of a sudden make a big, giant, looping, quick swim and you knock two people off, we walk into the end zone. So you better – now you give me up front the opportunity to basically what I like to say, what I talk to teams about all the time, take the passive out of pass protection. Right? Don't make me be passive. Let me be the aggressor. So now all that stuff is on the table, man. I can come off the ball like it's a run game, even though I know we're throwing it. How does that affect you as a defense? All those, because they basically played a match zone. They knew you were running some type of crossing routes, and they just let guys go across the field. They put their heels at about 3 yards on third and two, knowing, hey, man, all these crossing routes, we're just going to let them go. And as soon as they established themselves across the formation, you know, Sorensen picked up whoever was coming across from left to right, and whoever was going from right to left, somebody else picked them up. Then they dropped them when Teddy got pressure and started, you know, moving that way. It didn't matter, you know, that 87 sitting in the end zone or sitting on the 1 yard line, he'd been tackled if they'd have thrown it to him and he caught it. He'd been tackled on the one anyhow. Like, I'm wide open. There's nobody within 15 yards. He's throwing it over there. You know, he catches it, and then somebody comes screaming up there.
See that two-point conversion?
Yeah.
He caught it on the one and went down on the one.
Anybody notice that Albert O is...
Yes.
He is...
I've already given you that win.
Yes.
I gave you that win a long time ago.
I'm just wondering
okay.
if anybody else
You got
noticed.
That win. Okay? That's
why...
Put that one in the W yeah, call.
That's
okay?
why I'm on an
you
island, people.
You do not need to take the L on the way out of town with that one. You won that one, okay? Yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm just, all right.
I'm just
Mark Schlereth won that one. Okay.
Anyhow, but do you understand what I'm saying? Like, what gives you the best chance to me, it's like you still have to execute, you still have to do all that stuff, right? All that stuff has to happen. But can I make the defense see something that looks identical to something we've already done? And then do something completely different. That to me is, I want you as a defense to have to play everything. That's why it's so important to have a good second down and long, second down and 7+ run scheme. That's why it's so important to have a third down and 4- run scheme. Because if I can make you, if there's a threat and you have to honor it, then you know what you don't get to do? Pin your ears back and whip my butt in pass protection. So you have to just make them play honestly.
But you know what?
And
all that said, the play could have worked if, admittedly, from Vic Fangio, they weren't ready. There was confusion. And he said it was too late to call a timeout. What do you mean it was too late to call
a
timeout?
That was on fourth down.
That was
right?
on fourth down.
That fourth down.
But you're talking about just the third down play, why they didn't come out with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It goes back to the whole thing, too, about, you know, well, Mac Jones, why couldn't Mac Jones do here what he's doing in New England? I'll tell you why. Because watch them tonight. Watch how many times they complete passes within 5 to 7 yards of the line of scrimmage. And watch how often these guys are open.
Mm-hmm.
Translate that over here, where we know we got a quarterback who is, that's his MO, right?
Yeah.
Teddy check down, right? Going to be safe. Going to make the smart decisions. The ball's going to come out fast. All those talking points that we discussed during the offseason. And yet,
Nobody's open.
Right.
Chris Collinsworth, a former wide receiver. Did you pick up fans about two or three times? He's like, hey, these receivers need to make a play now.
Yeah.
It's time for these receivers to make a play.
Somebody got to go get open.
Somebody needs to go get open.
Somebody's got to win right now. Yeah.
So, you know, I know ultimately it lands in the lap of Teddy Bridgewater. It lands in the lap of Pat Shurmur. But you got all these first-round picks, now guys who are getting paid on second contracts. Get open.
Win.
Do your job. Win.
Yeah.
You know, all I hear about Jerry Jeudy, exceptional footwork. Okay, win. Cortland Sutton with his reach. Win. Noah Fant, jaw-dropping athleticism for a man who's, you know, 260 pounds. Win. They don't win. They don't win. All right, coming up, Troy Rank, our Denver 7 insider. He was in Kansas City last night. He'll join us for his observations. But right now, we want to give you a chance to join us for a special fan VIP event coming up on December 15th, where you get a chance to mingle with us, the fan hosts, and catch an exclusive early screening of American Underdog, the Kurt Warner story. We'll take caller number 4 for a 4-pack of VIP seats to the event. Caller number 4 right now, 303-713-1043. Millennial Ben standing by to take your call next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
All right, Troy Rank, is he back from KC? He's back. Traveled from KC this morning. Our Denver 7 insider, presented by ROX Rocks Heating and Air. All right, Troy, you've had a chance to sleep on it and think about it on the flight home. One or two big observations from last night.
Let's not get crazy. I didn't sleep. But, yeah, listen, it's the offensive issues remain impossible to ignore. Winning time of possession is cotton candy. It's empty calories. They've got to find a way to get more explosive, more vertical. They run the ball well, but it doesn't mean anything if you're not able to finish drives. That 20-play drive was one of the oddest I've ever seen in Broncos history. It was the longest in 20 years. And then to not have a score out of it. You took 18% of the game clock off and did not score. So the observation is they have a playoff defense, and their offense continues to hold them back. Some of it's schematic. I would say more schematic this year than in years past because they have some talented players. But it's just frustrating for Broncos country, I know, just to feel like you have not closed the gap on the Chiefs.
I think one of the things that's been interesting, and it's been very prominent on the text line, is people are blaming Teddy Bridgewater for this loss, the lack of points and the offensive performance. Is it Teddy Bridgewater's fault in your mind?
He didn't play well. I mean, he had gone four games without a turnover mark, but the pressure early wasn't great. Teddy Bridgewater's not meant to scribble outside the lines, and he doesn't throw the ball vertically. That is the real issue I have with Teddy is just his reluctance to give his receivers a chance to make a play. Get an interference call. Underthrow it purposely. Do a back shoulder throw. But to sit there and say their offensive woes are the direct result of Bridgewater, I'd say no. I'd say for me, it's more 90% on Pat Shurmur. They don't use their talent the right way. They have guys that just disappear for long stretches. There's no continuity in the passing game. Is some of that Bridgewater's limitations? Yes. Teddy, for me, profiles as the ideal backup quarterback, like the best backup quarterback in the league. But once he plays more than four or five games or plays against good teams, he tends to get exposed. And we did see some of that last night. But to say that they lost because of Teddy Bridgewater, I'd say it was collective. And you have to still look at the way they use their passing game. Just to me, doesn't fit with the modern NFL.
Do you, when you're sitting up high there and you're watching, are guys winning? Are receivers winning and Bridgewater's just not finding them? Or is this collection of first and second rounders just not getting open?
Well, sometimes they're not getting open. And the Chiefs defense is playing really well right now. And, you know, to be fair, over the last 5-6 weeks, they have been, along with the Patriots, the best defense in the league. So let us put that out there. They weren't playing a terrible defense. But the defense preys on the fact that there's really no fear they're going to get beat over the top. And that's where Teddy fails to me, is not giving Courtland Sutton, Tim Patrick, Judy chances to make plays on 50-50 balls. Everything ends up underneath, you know, and the tight end route is constantly underneath. We never see a seam route from a tight end. It's always a crossing route, 2 yards on 3rd and 6. There's just schematically, they make themselves so predictable that unless you just execute perfectly, the play doesn't work. And that's where I get frustrated. But so when I watch it, yeah, there's sometimes that's the case. Sometimes it's Teddy's reluctance to take chances. That's in his DNA to not try to turn the ball over. He's throwing downfield, not his strength. But, you know, again, it's just you can't play this way and be a playoff team. You can beat bad teams this way. You can't play this way offensively and beat good teams.
Are they a playoff team, Troy?
For me, they're not. But I had them 9-8 before the year. That is still realistic. It's unfortunate because this last month, they don't have to win out. To be a playoff team, they're going to have to win 4 or 5. But where they messed up was, again, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Oakland, and Philly. If you win 2 of those 4 games, you were favored in all of them, I believe, other than Cleveland. You're sitting pretty right now. You're more along the lines of 8-4 instead of 6-6. At the very least, they should be 7-5 right now to win 1 of those 4 games I mentioned. So to me, they're not. They've shown improvement. They are better. But again, you can't reach the playoffs averaging 20 points a game. You would have to have the 85 Bears defense or the 15 Broncos defense to win this way. And it's counterintuitive to how the NFL operates.
We ride the roller coaster every week, and now it's 6-6. How do you think, how do you feel George Payton looks at this team? What does he see when he looks at this quarterback and this coaching staff?
Yeah, listen, this idea that George Payton's going to do everything that they did in Minnesota, and they're just going to say, okay, it's Teddy Bridgewater for the next couple of years because that's how we won in Minnesota. Stop with that. He's a different man. He's his own man here. He's making the decisions. He will have autonomy to go get a coach after the season, even as the ownership issue remains in flux. So how I think he looks at it is they've done some good things. They've shown improvement. But ultimately, if they go 9-8 or 8-9, that's a huge disappointment for a team that was clearly believing they could, with this schedule too, reach the playoffs. So how do I think he's viewing it? That for me, again, for me, if they don't reach the playoffs, there will be changes. Now, again, if they go 9-8, and they beat the Chiefs at the end, and there's, you know, maybe there'd be momentum to keep Coach Fangio and change the offensive coordinator. But for me, it's felt like playoff or bust, Mike, from jump. And I know George Payton sees a really solid young core. You just invested in receivers, big money. You've got to be able to get them the ball and score more points. So they know they've got offensive issues, and they know they're going to have to upgrade a quarterback if they want to take that next step.
Where do they find that quarterback? You think they find that quarterback in the draft, or you think they find that quarterback in free agency next season?
Well, to free agency or trade will be the top priority. The problem is you don't control the trade. So between Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, I still believe one of them finds a new home. But, you know, could Rodgers go to Pittsburgh? Yes, he could. Could Russell Wilson stay put? And they say, Russell, you're in charge of everything in Seattle? That could happen too. They don't really control that, and that's the problem. They do have the draft picks to put them in position to go get either guy now with a 1, 2 twos, and 2 threes, but you don't know that the Packers or Seahawks, they don't have to trade these guys. And who else is out there? A Matt Ryan, a Kirk Cousins, you know, that. I don't know if that would excite them. In the draft, there's guys they like. They've scouted pretty much every top prospect in the draft, Mark. That's where, you know, could you draft a guy and keep Bridgewater as a bridge guy for 4 games or something before the young guy's ready? Maybe. But they're going to have all options open on the table through trade, free agency, and draft. The problem is it's not the strongest draft, and there's not a lot of options in free agency at quarterback. Bridgewater's going to be one of the top free agents in the NFL. I mean, it's just not the best timing to be looking for a quarterback.
Go get Minshew. All right, Troy. Thank you.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Troy Rank, our Denver 7 insider. He is presented by ROX Rocks Heating and Air.
As long as you draft one in the first round, he's guaranteed to be great.
Correct.
So, look,
if George Payton ends up drafting a quarterback in the first round, the one consolation I'll have, I won't necessarily agree with it, but the one consolation I'll have is I know that this guy will have done his due diligence, unlike his predecessor. I said doo-doo about three or four times. I know, that's all I could just see. I knew that as soon as I said doo-doo-doo, I lost you. Whatever I said after that, I might as well just stop and just focus on the doo-doo-doo.
He's the dude.
I know, I said.
He's good. Doo-doo.
Do. I said it three times. But.
The doo-doo-doo runs the doo-doo-doo.
That's why I kick myself, folks. Sometimes I kick myself because as soon as I say something like that, I'm like, oh, I just lost him. I saw that look on his face. Mm. All right, we've got one more segment to get your reaction. We'll do that next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. All right, let's rattle through some hot takes from you guys. Here's one. Teddy and Paxton Lynch are one and the same. They could have done no worse with Paxton as the QB last night. Teddy is Paxton without the size, speed, or tears. No?
No.
Here's one for you. Unpopular opinion, but Fangio has been coaching well this year. John Fox averaged 30 points per game with Manning. You get Fangio or Rodgers or Wilson, they destroy the Chiefs last night. Aaron from West Colfax.
Yeah, he just needs a unicorn Hall of Fame quarterback. That's what you're saying?
Well, it's what Mike Shanahan needed to win.
Yeah, it's easy.
It's what Bill Belichick needed to win.
Shanahan did go to the AFC title game with Plummer is the quarterback.
Yeah. Plenty of teams that are easily forgettable have been able to make it to a championship game. Minnesota made it to a championship game with Case Keenum. Yes. Jeez, Benny, what do you need? What do you need to be cordially invited?
Case Keenum.
Case Keenum.
They already played that.
Keenum, here's the interception.
There is something to the idea that if you take what Fangio, whatever you think about Fangio as a head coach, I think we're understanding, aren't we, that this guy's a heck of a defensive coach. Yeah, and once he's fired here, he'll land very quickly on his feet as somebody's defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And that team will be very happy.
He does a great job with that stuff.
He will be unemployed for 5 minutes before somebody hires him as their defensive coordinator.
Now, challenge flags, not his strong suit.
Well, you don't have to do that as a defensive coordinator. What? Okay, yeah, let's we didn't talk about that one. What? Haven't we seen it? Why is it that we, the fans, can sit on our couch and watch a play and understand that we've been watching enough football of late to know that on that kind of bang-bang play, they're going to err on favoring the receiver or the quarterback and call that an incomplete pass? We've seen so many examples of that. If we watch football as we do, we see example after example. I'd say 90% of the time that play is always called an incomplete pass.
Correct.
Why does he think this time it's going to be different when he throws the challenge?
Because he's a defensive coach. And he feels like, as a defensive coach, my defense just forced a turnover. I should get that call. I don't like the way that it's almost like I said this last week. It's like a protest. I protest the way we call these things. That's it. It's my protest. But you waste the challenge flag, you waste the timeout. So, you know, the way that works is catch the ball, possess the ball. You have to get your third foot down, and it's more than just it. There's got to be time. So there's got to be your third foot down or make a football move. And I think the third foot can't just be touching as the ball comes out. It's got to be down, and you've got to be starting to make a move. And if you don't have those kind of three elements, you're not getting that call. I mean, just look at the way it's called around the league.
Right.
We used to coach this all the time. It's not holding if you don't call it holding. So what do they call holding? Well, these are the things they call holding. So let's coach our players up. Let's make sure that we eliminate that kind of grab from, you know, our football holding vernacular, if you will, right? Like, those are the things that we're going to let go of. Don't do that. On these things that they don't call holding, undress the dude. Because it doesn't get called. So know what gets called, know what doesn't get called. Understand, like you said, they're always going to err on the side of the offense possessing the ball. Why? Because the NFL wants scores. So that helps the offense, and incompletion for the offense is better than a strip sack fumble.
Exactly. And you got to know that when you're getting ready to throw a challenge for
it. Especially if you're the Chiefs.
Right.
If you're an outstanding offense, they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
So why? You're right. Maybe it is personal with him and ego gets involved, because otherwise a clear thinking coach would look at it and say, okay, I'm trying to get them to overturn a play and it needs incontrovertible evidence to overturn it. Okay. That's
dude, I'm
one.
I'm glad you got that.
That's one.
I had no help for you.
That's one. Two.
I was going to say inconclusive.
We're going to try to get them to overturn an offensive play.
Right.
That's two.
Right.
Three, we're going to ask them to overturn an offensive play involving a Kansas City Chiefs player at Arrowhead.
Right.
These are the things you have to think about. Granted, quickly, but you got to think about them if you're going to be a head coach. And there's a timeout.
There is.
At risk.
It's Travis Kelce, star in the league.
Yeah.
It's Kansas City, a relevant championship caliber organization. It's Andy Reid, Hall of Fame coach when he decides to retire, and it's Patrick Mahomes, a unicorn. Good luck. It's just not gonna happen. It's just as soon as you threw the challenge flag, I was getting on the plane. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I didn't even see the replay, Mike. I was like, there is no way they're going to overturn that. Why would you throw that?
When they called the timeout, I'm like, oh, maybe they're just calling a timeout. Then I went, oh, no, no. They're throwing the challenge flag.
Right.
This has nothing to do with the conversation, but it's such an inflammatory text. I have to read it.
Oh, great.
They didn't have to.
Does it involve me?
They didn't have to put bacon. Hash Brown sent it to the internet to get my attention. It's disgusting that you guys compare the 2015 Broncos defense to the 85 Bears. What a bleeping joke. You're right. The Broncos defense was greater. Well, it was. You're talking about being a dominant defense in 2015 when everything is set up to favor the offense versus 1985 when quarterbacks could get hit and mauled. And receivers could get hit and mauled. And defenses could hit and maul. Couldn't do that in 2015. And yet, what'd they do in back-to-back games? Went out and suffocated Brady and Cam Newton. You're right, Texter. You are right. It is disgusting to compare the 85 Bears with the Denver Broncos of 2015. What a joke.
I didn't look at it that way, but you're right. You are 100% right. Who did the Bears play in the playoffs, too, by the way? Did they play any prolific? They beat the Patriots.
With Tony Eason and Steve Tony Hogan Eason. With the neck roll.
Yeah. So
I don't know who they beat in the NFC. I mean, they were dominant, don't get me wrong, but what was it? 30 years later? NFL had evolved quite a ways offensively by then.
Right.
To be able to do that defensively.
All the rules were bent toward the offense being successful. You're 100% right.
All right. Plenty more reaction coming up throughout the course of the day. I just got a text back. Wow, you're dumb. No. I just proved you're dumb. Yeah. I get the last word. My show. I get the last word. Chad and Nate coming up next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.